Should we make a start? Because we're running a bit late. So. Gives you less of me, which is always a good thing. So I didn't actually download it, but I saw a picture on Facebook, and it had someone that said, "What I'm thinking and what I say, and what I'm thinking had a you know, one of those thought bubbles full of all sorts of stuff, and what I actually say was sort of nothing." And I thought it applied to me a little bit. Anyway. This morning, we most second Sundays of the month, we get together to pray. And this month, it was the Sunday after cabaret. So I have to admit, I was a little weary as I left to go to the meeting. But we had a great time. Dave had got a large sheet of paper. We drew out the layout for cabaret. We put on the different guests who were on the who were at cabaret that we could remember, and then we spent time just praying for the different tables and for the guests who'd come. And I just went away an hour later from that meeting really energized, really excited. It was great praying for the people. It was great to remember what cabaret is really about. And I got a picture of that piece of paper up on my wall, and I'm going to be praying through that as we go through. So those prayer meetings, they're about mission. They're praying for Dayspring. Everyone's welcome, more than welcome to come along. A couple of months ago, we were going to pray about finance in that prayer meeting, and Dave rang me up on the Friday, and he said, it would be good if you could share where you're at with your praying for the finances for Dayspring. So I had to do some thinking. And at lunchtime, as I was heating up my lunch in the kitchen at the old office, the passage from Genesis 13 came to me, which is about Lot and Abraham and about them separating. So I'll just play this if it works.
Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and in gold. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot,
"Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right, or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left."
And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him,
"Lift your eyes now, and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land, through its length and its width, for I give it to you.
Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord.
Some people have said over the years that I do seem to have faith for finances. I remember early in the life of the other bus, the old bus, the gearbox failed, and Andy was wondering what we do about it. And I think in our discussions, I got to the point of saying, well, we need the gearbox fixed. We need to get the bus back out on the road. Go and spend the money you need to, and we'll find it. And we did. Another time, I used to produce regularly what we used to call cash flow reports, and it looked at the expected income and the expected expenditure for a month. And one particular month, things weren't looking too good at the end of the month. It looked like we would be short of money, we might not be able to pay some of the bills. And I remember that week just praying, Lord, it shouldn't be like this. You're a God of infinite resources. You know, give us the money. And before we met as a core team, a week later, a gift had come in from an unexpected source, which had totally transformed the situation. Early in the financial crisis, so sort of 2008, 2009, it wasn't unusual for Sue and I to go to parties and things that friends and neighbours were having. And for a lot of the discussion to be about the financial crisis and who was facing redundancies and whose companies were doing struggling and who was having a reduction in their salary just so they could keep people at work. And I know a lot of people went through that. And people would turn to me and say, how are you finding it at Dayspring? And I have to say, well, God is really blessing us. We're seeing money come in, more money than we've had the year before. And then I think we had an update meeting in 2010-2011, and somebody commented that it was likely that we were going to see a double dip recession and that people might be made redundant because of that, and we might struggle with the giving because people wouldn't be able to give if they were made redundant. And I don't know whether it was a bit of a flippant remark, but I said, well, again, we believe in a God of infinite resource, even if there is a recession, people won't necessarily lose their jobs. Even if they are made redundant, they may well walk into other jobs straight away. And 2012 was the best year that we've ever had for giving within Dayspring. And we had seen some people who sadly were made redundant, but we did see them go it straight into new jobs and be able to give. But then in 2013, the amount of money that we had given to Dayspring went down. 2014, it reduced again. We had to bring in deficit reduction measures that we've applied, and those are continuing to be applied. 2015, it went down again. And so when I came to do the budget in 2016 and to look at what we might see come in, and particularly what we were going to need to spend to do what we believe that God has got for us, I was beginning to think, well, maybe we've got to cut our cloth according to our means. Maybe we've got to look again at the things that we do, look again at the stuff that we have. Interestingly, with what Carol's just said, I was advocating maybe the office was a luxury. Maybe we need to close the office down and make a saving to do that. And so when God brought this passage to mind back in February, it did bring me up short, because where was I looking? What was my perspective? In this passage, you've got Lot and Abraham. They're doing very well. There's strife between their husband because they can't find enough grazing for all the flocks that they've got. And so Abraham says, come on, let's not argue. You decide where you'd like to go. And Lot looks around and he sees the Valley of the Jordan. And it says that it was well watered. It's like the Garden of the Lord, which I'm told is a reference to the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve were put in creation time. And so looking at it, he thinks, I'm going to go there. That'll be good for my flocks. That'll be a great place. That'll be where I'll do well. And it's interesting, isn't it? There's no fault of him. You know, he wasn't generous enough to say, oh, how about we share this really good land over here to Abraham? He just took advantage of what Abraham said. He looked at it through the world's eyes. And he said, this will be a good place for me. He also didn't pick up the fact that there were two cities there that had already been described as having wicked things happening in them. And didn't see the fact that he'd be living near them and he could be drawn in by temptation. And so I felt that God was saying that, you know, Lot in this case was looking through the world's eyes. He was looking things through his own eyes. And in many ways, we've got to look at things through God's perspective. And so really what I want to talk about today is spiritual intelligence, and to say that spiritually intelligent people look for God's view. I guess if I was really expressing it, but I thought the words were a bit long, that spiritually intelligent people seek God's perspective on situations. In certain situations, I find I just, you know, things press my buttons and I react in a certain way. When things go wrong, do you find you just go into coping mechanisms? Greg Reeves shared a wonderful story once. He said, I had a dream recently, and he dreamt that at Christmas time, he'd woken up on Christmas Day, and somehow he and Sue, his wife, he realised that they hadn't bought any presents for the kids for Christmas. And he said he woke up the next morning and he said to Sue, his wife, he said, I had a weird dream last night. He said, what was it? He said, oh, I had this dream that we woke up on Christmas Day and we hadn't bought any presents for the kids. And she said, I bet I know what you did then. He said, what? He said, you went into control mode. And he said, she was exactly right. He was straight into, I can sort this, I better go out and go and find some presents, I can find some shops that are open, do that sort of thing. So are there situations, are there times when we just respond out of our experience, respond in the world's way, or do we stop and look at situations from God's perspective? Remember when I was doing this story as a kid, the person who was teaching the story sort of gave the impression that Lot chose this really good and fertile land, and then Abraham sort of looked over where he was going to have to go, and it was barren and looked terrible, and there was going to be no grazing for his flocks. Don't know that the Bible story bears that out. And immediately, so it was portrayed to me as a kid, God spoke to Abraham and said, don't worry, I'll look after you, I'll bless you, I'll increase your flocks. But if we actually look at what happened, it says after Lot had separated from Abraham. So how many days did that take? Certainly a few days for Lot to pack everything up and to move on. Maybe a week. I wonder whether Abraham regretted his generosity during that time. And then God spoke to him and said that look to the north and to the south and to the east and the west. And I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give you descendants. I'm going to bless you. And so the promises that Abraham got wasn't about his flocks and how well he was going to do. Those were all, you know, that would just happen as a consequence. The promises from God were things that would last, were things of legacy. It was about a nation. It was about a people, about a descendants, about a land. And you notice at the end of it as well, there was a command from God that he was to walk through the land, through the length and the breadth. And as he was doing that, if you'd gone and spoken to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, you could have said to them, look, there goes Abraham. He owns this land. God has given him this land. And at that time, they would have thought you had been silly. You know, it's just a nomad, just a shepherd. They come and go. And yet there was the promises of God and that. For Sue and for me, education is right up there on the importance level. The education of our kids. Part of that is because of the upbringing that we've had. I remember my parents telling me soon after, they told me when I was older, but apparently they were talking to some friends just after they'd come back from Brazil in 78. I was 8 years old. And one of the things they were concerned about and they were talking to these friends about was whether the 3 years of schooling that I'd had in Brazil had affected my chances in education long term and whether I would do as well in English education system because of that. Now, I have to say the time in Brazil has been so formative to my life that I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I didn't do too badly. I was good enough at mucking up my own educational chances by not working. For Sue's parents, they could be poster people for social mobility through education. They both got scholarships to grammar schools. Both did very well. Sue's dad was one of five. I think I've said before, there were four pairs of shoes at the door. Last one out the door went out without shoes on. When he got his scholarship to the grammar school, the family actually sat down and worked out whether they could afford for him to continue his education and whether he needed to go and get a job instead. But he was able to carry on in education. He went to university. He then went into business. And 10 years ago, he retired as having been a FTSE 250 chief executive for 10 years. And so education is something we consider important. And so when Isabella was due to go to secondary school, we began to think about what the options were. Were there scholarships that we could get? You know, was John Bentley the right school? Remember, we went to one open evening and people knew us and they said, is Isabella coming to secondary school next year? It seems to have gone very quickly. No, it's a few years away, but we're just having a view, look around. I remember going to one school and I got out of the car and I said to, just prayed a short prayer, I said, Lord, I'd just like to hear from you about this school. And almost immediately I got an answer back, or just got the phrase in my head, do you trust me for their education? And one of the things Sue and I have always prayed for our kids is that they would grow up to know Jesus Christ for themselves. They would delight in his ways. That the Bible will be a lamp unto their feet, that it will be a guide for their life. And so while education is important, we also had in mind that we wanted our kids to grow up and be going on with God. And they could have the best education that the UK could offer. But if they weren't going on, weren't disciples of Jesus, then we would be disappointed. And so we wrestled with it and we discussed it. And we talked about it. And eventually, as you probably know, we decided that John Bentley was the place for Isabella. And there's a point of trusting God in that. But it's also been a delight to see how she's settled into the school and how she's working hard. This week she's come home really excited because she's on the house debating team. Got that from Sue, not from me, I can tell you. they had a Christmas performance, and along with Matt and Kit, Isabella was in the band playing the flute because it was a musical, and that was just fantastic to go and watch and see her do that. I once played in a band, but I could never keep up. And we heard on the grapevine, and this is something that does make us makes us hugely proud, but also makes us smile. They had a debate in class about religion versus science. And apparently Isabella was the only one who stood up for religion. And she, I think the teacher described it, she held her own. But that's God's perspective. You know, what is God's perspective in the situation? Story I've told certainly once, but a good few years ago, so hopefully not too many of you remember it. Early in my time, when I was back at Avon working in Chippenham, I was struggling to get some parts approved by Vauxhall Opel. It had come down to this final test, and I was dispatched up to Ellesmere Port because the results were going to come out, and hopefully I was going to come back with the approval. And as I drove up, I was praying. I had to discipline myself to pray because I'm very good at just listening to the radio when I'm driving in the car. So I was listening to the radio for half an hour, and then I'd pray for half an hour. That's how I got through it. And initially my prayer was, Lord, make these parts pass. But by the end of the time of the journey, which was 3-4 hours, my prayer was, Lord, whatever happens, I know that you'll be with me in this situation. And so I got there, and the parts had failed. And I was trying to get hold of the engineer for the parts, who was in Germany, but I couldn't get in contact with him, see whether there was anything we could do with the test, or how important the test was. So I put some things in place, I spoke to my boss, got in the car and was heading back down the motorway. And my boss rang me, he said he'd been talking to his boss, and I was to go back in and to sit there until I got the approval. So I went back into the customer and sat in the corner of the lab. Still couldn't get hold of the engineer in Germany. The boss of the lab at Vauxhall said, you must have a horrible boss. And that evening I found a hotel. I remember ringing Sue, really upset. Interesting, isn't it? Dave did know I was going to talk about Abraham a lot today, but he was talking about Abraham last week and about how his faith wavered, although if you read Paul, it didn't. And having had that promise in the morning, I was upset in the evening. At the end of the day, it was only parts for a car, and not a very good one at that. And next morning I went back in. And the guy who was in charge of the lab, he said, I've been looking at the results. He said, one part nearly passed. I think I can give you an approval for that one. Wow, that's good. And then finally got hold of the engineer in Germany, and I said, we're struggling to get through this test. Is there anything we can do? He said, yeah, I was looking at the drawing the other day. I don't know why I put that test on the drawing. So he took the test off the drawing. And so mid-morning, I was driving home with two approvals, and God had been with me in that situation. And yes, God could have made the parts pass the test. God can, if you like, wave a magic wand and just smooth life out for us. He has that ability. But he doesn't choose to do that. That situation, that horrible boss, as he was described, soon became my boss. And while my faith did waver like Abraham's regularly with that relationship, that was the first step on learning to look for God's perspective in situations at work. Learning at times when everything was going wrong and everyone was blaming you, to actually find out what the problems were and get to the meat of the problem and solve it and sort it out. And so that was God helping me. It was a learning point in my career. God's perspective on things. Right, I guess, have I got another 10 minutes-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can. I was going to ask quickly then, if you'd like to get into little groups and discuss, when, I've got a question here somewhere, haven't I? Yes. When have you found it helpful to see a situation from God's perspective? And we've got 2 minutes. Right. If you can bring your conversations to an end. Because we're a bit short of time, I won't ask for feedback. Hopefully there were some good stories and encouraging stuff there. So where do we need to see God's perspective in situations? It was interesting, Dave Day brought up, he was asking his questions, and I think it was Alan actually who brought up about the EU referendum and the discussions there. And then a couple of weeks later, I don't know if you heard, but you probably did, the MPs in Westminster voted not to accept 3,000 child migrants who are on their own in Europe, who've come into Europe and have lost their parents or the adults that were bringing them, or have travelled on their own, I don't know. And I know that there are Christians who feel that we need to leave the EU. The EU, at best, they would describe it as a great secular bureaucracy, and as a nation we need to leave it and become the great Christian country that we once were. You can probably tell that I don't necessarily agree with that. But the thing that really struck me was, I honestly don't know that God really worries too much about whether the UK is in the EU or not. But I'm pretty sure he does worry about those 3,000 migrant children. There we go. Got the story of Jesus and the little children. Remember, the mothers were bringing the children to be blessed by Jesus. The disciples felt he was too tired or too busy or whatever. Said, no, go away, don't bother him. And Jesus actually was indignant, it says. Let the little children come to me. Truly I tell you, if anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. And he blessed them. The other thing that struck me was towards the end of Jesus' ministry in Matthew 25. This is the one I've got written in. Says, when the Son of Man comes in glory and all his angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him. And he'll separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. I'm sure many of you know the story. He'll then turn to the people on the right and say, come, you are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. When I was a stranger, you gave me shelter. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick or in prison, you came to visit me. And of course, you all remember, people say to him, when did we see you like that, Lord? And he says, whenever, whatever you did for the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did it for me. And so that's where my thinking is about those 3,000 migrant children. I will vote in the EU referendum. We'll be voting to stay in, for what it's worth. But I'll be keeping a bigger eye on what the government does about those 3,000 kids, because I think that is far more important to God That is God's perspective. Having said all of that, there is a hustings in Cannes on the 27th of May. 26th of May. About the EU referendum. And if you want to find out about that, it's well worth going. And we can give you more details if you're interested. Cabaret. I've been really excited by how Cabaret's gone this year. It's been great to get back up and running again after the fallow year. It's been great to see old friends come back. Chiquita and Carol and Andy and Rachel and others invite people who used to come to Cabaret regularly and have had a year off. It's been great to see new people coming. Sue had guests, Rosie, Donna. Not wanting to single anyone out, but it's really exciting to see Richard beginning to get friends coming from work. One the first time, two the second. For me, it's been great to have a big team to put it all together. People willing to help. The Sunday morning clear up just makes life so much easier. And I'm really excited about the acts and what we've seen happen and do that. Cabaret was one of those things when we started, we said we want to do it for people like us. And by that we meant for friends and for colleagues and for neighbours. We wanted somewhere that we could bring those people and they could hear stories of faith. And we use stories of faith because in this day and age, you can tell a story and people will listen to it, will be drawn in, and you can speak truth through the story. But if you tell people straight out, you can't. And we felt that it was important not to have singing and other stuff that we really enjoy on a Sunday morning, because people who don't come to church regularly find that pretty strange. And at the time, people said, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? Why don't you pray the prayer? But over the years, it's been really exciting to see the numbers who come. The fact that every event, at least 50% of the people have little or no church contact. Sometimes it's 75%. But there have been other things. We thought when Cabaret started, we were going to get people coming along and they'd hear the stories of faith and then they'd come along to an Alpha course. But we found that the gap is too wide. It doesn't work like that. Really excited by Alpha coming up. I'm sure there are going to be people on there. And as Dave, I think, said, when people come to Alpha, they become disciples of Jesus. And that's brilliant. And we've tried other things. We've had Cafe, we've had Essence. But we've never seemed to manage to quite and not found out what's next after Cafe and all of those kind of things. And just before I came to the prayer meeting on the Sunday after Cabaret, I was putting Toby to bed and I was reading his Bible story, and it was Joshua and the defeat of Jericho. And the way the story was written in his children's Bible was that God had a special plan. And God did have a special plan. Jericho had huge walls. It was really difficult to defeat. And all God had them do was walk around it 6 days. And then seven times on the seventh day. And the walls came tumbling down when they shouted. And so I came away, having read that story, came to the prayer meeting. And I really do think with Cabaret, we need to find a new perspective on where it's at, how we take it forward. It may be that these people need to come to Cabaret. I mean, I think Chiquita was saying this, or someone was, that some of Chiquita's friends, they come to Cabaret regularly and they call Dayspring their church, which is exciting. But we want to see more. So what is God's perspective on Cabaret? Do we just keep doing it and hope something works out? And I'll be seeking God to find out where we are on Cabaret. I hope you will as well. We want to hear what God has for it, how he wants to reach these people, how he wants to touch them, whether we can facilitate in that and help that. I mean, it was great having Epiphany. The guys during setup really enjoyed it because they were in this room practicing. And we had a chamber concert going on as we were setting up. Mark Hind arrived and didn't realise they were practicing here. He wondered if I had a CD playing. It sounded so good. But the exciting thing about it was that they were playing those sound portraits over people. It was touching people. It was allowing God's Spirit to touch them and open them in a way like a step further than the story of faith. Maybe we need more acts like that, that just develop it, take things forward. I don't know. I think time's caught up with me. I could talk a bit more about this. But I do think it's important that we do think about what is God's perspective on situations. Whether it's work, home, family, cabaret, open blue, alpha. I think that's about all I've got to say. Thank you.